Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome to the Rolling Thunder Review. I am your host, Ben Mertens from Welcome to Loud City. Join me on the other line from Raptors HQ, we have Jay Rosales. What's up, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to, this matchup we got coming up is looking really exciting. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, and I'm excited to talk about Raps and Thunder.
Yeah, we get it twice. We get it twice in a row. That's exciting. Yeah. Wednesday and Friday, a little home and home action for you, which is, I think this is the only home and home the Thunder are going to play this regular season, unless I've forgotten one from earlier. They might have had a home and home with the Magic. Doesn't matter. The Raptors are a better team than the Magic. So let's get started talking about those Raptors. I normally, a lot of times on this program, start by asking people, you know, what's worked for your team so far. The answer for the Raptors is kind of everything. They've already won 50 games. They've already locked themselves into the playoffs. They're almost certainly going to be the second seed. They have, I guess, an outside chance of catching the Bucks for the one seed, but looks like they're going to be the second seed, which is great for them. So let's start on a different track. What's one thing that the Raptors kind of still struggle with or could be like a vulnerability for them as we get very close to the end of the season and the start of the playoffs?
Yeah, I think if there's one thing that we as Raptors fans are really concerned about is that there have been a grand total of one game where we have had a fully healthy squad, which is an incredible stat because this team, which has been known for its depth, has been tested throughout the year, right? Whether it's been Kawhi Leonard's load management or various thumb injuries to Valanciunas or Van Vliet, we've never had a fully healthy squad. And the irony of that is right before our last game against the Knicks, Nick Nurse, I guess, jinxed it by saying, hey, I'm looking forward to this game on Wednesday against the Thunder because we'll finally have a fully healthy squad. And, of course, during that game, Mitchell Robinson rolled over Kyle Lowry's ankle, and now he's questionable for the game against Thunder. So, I think that's one of the concerns, is that without a fully healthy squad, you know, Nurse has admitted himself that you can't really do the exact lineups and rotation that you'd like to do and get some chemistry and some continuity going there. So I think that's our biggest vulnerability at currently.
Yeah, the lineup has changed. Obviously, there was trading for Marc Gasol right at the deadline and then picking Jeremy Lin up as a buyout guy. And then on top of that, just the injuries and the fact that it's, you know, kind of a new team. Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard both joined the team via trade. Pascal Siakam did not have this big of a role last year and has like forced his way into a starting job and B into like fringe all-star consideration earlier this season. And you guys, a team like that, like, you know, the Thunder, it's been clear pretty much since like the third game of the season when Jeremiah Grant took Patrick Patterson's spot in the starting lineup, who the best five-man lineup they had was. It's the five that start. For the Raptors, I think that's less clear. And it sounds like they're still trying to figure that out just due to these injuries. So let's start going through some of those guys. We'll start with the most recent addition to the team, Marc Gasol, brought in right at the trade deadline. What did you think of that trade, and how has he looked since coming to the Raptors so far?
I absolutely love the trade. I was giddy like a schoolgirl when I heard that we had trade for him. One of the many things that I had been very vocal about over the past few years is as great as Valanciunas has been, especially this season and last season, there are limitations to his game, mainly, you know, his ability to get exposed against teams like the Golden State Warriors, who, you know,
expose
at
everyone.
The end of the day, right. And his limitations in his game, whether it be the 3-point shot, his ability to pass. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate for him that he kind of grew up in an era that was, a bit, he kind of came in a little bit late. If he was in the 90s, he'd be an amazing all-star and whatnot, but his limitations in the game kind of limited our ceiling, and trading for Gasol kind of raised the roof, as it were, for what our potential was. And it's also a signal to Kawhi Leonard, and I know this is obviously a hot topic all season long when you talk about the Raptors is whether or not Kawhi is going to stay. And I feel like the trade for Gasol signaled to Kawhi, you know, we're going all out. We will sacrifice some of our future because DeLon Wright was very highly regarded as a possible backup point guard of the future should we need to tear down and start over again. So sacrificing a bit of our future with a bit of our present being JV for someone like Gasol who's on the wrong side of 30 was a big signal to the fan base as well as Kawhi that, you know, they're in win now mode. As it comes to his effect on the team, it's been amazing. Everything that I could have hoped for, everything that Raptors fans could have hoped for. Since Marc Gasol joined the Raptors, some numbers for you. The Raptors have increased their number of assists from 15th in the league to 4th, number of passes from 20th to 6th, and points created off assists from 13th to 2nd. So the amount of ball movement that's going around and the result of that ball movement has just been amazing. And I mean, you can see it. I mean, it passes the numbers test, but even the eye test. I mean, when you have a guy like Gasol, who immediately in his first game was very vocal on the defensive end, calling out switches and calling out all kinds of plays that he's seeing on the defensive end. I mean, that's just I'm highly excited about where we're headed as a team with Gasol on this roster.
Yeah, at the summer when this Kawhi Leonard trade first happened, I wrote an article for our site about how this is Toronto is with Kawhi Leonard taking kind of the same gamble that the Thunder took with Paul George, trading for a guy who has 1 year left on his contract, is obviously a super, superstar player, and there's no guarantee you can keep him. And so you gotta try to go all out to make sure you can keep that guy. And one of the things the Thunder did, which did not work at all basketball wise, was trade for Carmelo Anthony. But that did send a signal to George, like, look how serious this team is. They want to win right now. They're going to do what it takes. They're going to trade for this 10-time All-Star who then played not like a 10-time All-Star. But he was on the record saying he was really impressed by that move and he loved them going out and getting Carmelo Anthony, who was a player he admired. And the Gasol thing is the same thing, except it's worked much better basketball-wise, to your point. And I really liked it for Toronto, you know, going for it from the Kawhi standpoint, going for it of a all-in to try to push to the finals this year standpoint. And as a basketball fit, because he gave them something they didn't have, which was an elite passer from the elbows and from the top of the key. Like, Gasol is a good scorer and a pick-and-pop guy, but Serge Ibaka can also do pick-and-pop. And defensively, Gasol is going to be better than Valanciunas or Ibaka against a guy like Embiid, but against, like, you know, faster point guards, he might struggle a bit. But offensively, he gives you that passing facilitating guy where the only great passer on the Raptors is, like, Kyle Lowry. Kawhi gets some assists, but he's, you know, much better at getting his own shot. Fred VanVleet is a decent backup point guard. Like, Gasol is an elite, elite passer, one of the best passing big men around. And it just gives the Raptors one more thing to work with. And I guess the only concern there is, do they have enough time to work in Gasol along with everything else that we already talked about and trying to figure out what the best lineups are?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of my favorite stats when we first acquired him was that he's number one in elbow assists over the last 6 years and counting. So, I mean, that just opens up another avenue for the Raptors offense. And again, to my point earlier, that, you know, we've seen the fruits of that of those passes.
So, Valanciunas was part of that trade for Gasol, huge upgrade, obviously. So the remaining, you know, kind of center now on the team is Serge Ibaka, former Thunder, who is more of a power forward when he played in OKC, but I think he has rightfully played more of his minutes at center as he's gotten older. What has the Serge Ibaka experience been like in Toronto over these last couple of years, aside from these fights that he keeps getting into and keeps getting suspended for?
I was just going to say the same thing. It's like we almost made it. I mean, we made it to the beginning of March and he hadn't had a fight and all of a sudden it just happened. So, yeah, he's met his quota. So I'm kind of, I guess I'm glad that that's out of the way. I'm also glad on the timing of it because he gets to return against the Thunder, right? So it's not like he's, yeah. I mean, there was this article I was reading the other day about how he has this tendency to, when he gets into brawls, he manages to miss his punches. And that actually works in his favor because if he actually do connect, then you're out for much longer, right? But the experience has been improving, I'll say, because when he first joined the team, I think the biggest knock on him was that, you know, I guess everyone was kind of hoping for the dominant Ibaka that was on the Thunder. And it wasn't quite happening, at least on when we first acquired him. And that got even worse during last year's playoffs when he was an absolute no-show. So yeah, the jury was out on him heading into the season, and you know there were a lot of hesitation from Raptors fans. But I think Nick Nurse and more specifically Kyle Lowry have done a great job in terms of bringing out the best in him. The pick and roll game between Lowry and Ibaka has been incredible. Ibaka is among the league leaders in 2-point field goal percentage, and that mid ranger is money. And it kind of makes up for some of the mid-range jumpers that was kind of lost when we gave up DeRozan this summer. But I believe Ibaka at last check, he was number one in the league in, I think, 16 or those mid-range jumpers in terms of percentage. So a great addition to have. And, you know, it's kind of a very difficult thing to guard. I mean, whenever they would run the pick and roll, the second it ends up in Ibaka's hands, there's just this comfort level as a viewer that you know that ball's going in. So very exciting to see. I think that, you know, it gives me some hope at least that, you know, we've got a solid foundation come playoff time. But again, as I was mentioning earlier in terms of this playoff Ibaka that didn't show up last year, the jury's still out, and hopefully, you know, it doesn't rear its ugly head. And, you know, to take that step a little bit further is that if for some reason the Ibaka from last year's playoff shows up, that's the insurance that Gasol provides, right? I mean, we have two very good all-star caliber centers that we can play with here. And, you know, if Ibaka falters at all, then we know we've got Gasol and we can just kind of sub right in there. So I'm very hopeful on how this turns out. And, you know, this season has proved that he's been worth the wait.
Yeah, I mean, he's gotten better, at least in the regular season, since leaving Oklahoma City, where in Oklahoma City, you know, he was his role defensively. He was Serge Ibaka. He blocked a ton of shots and he was a fringe DPOY guy some of the years in OKC and was huge for them then. And offensively, it was stand in the corner and take a lot of corner threes or like corner 18 footers. And in Toronto in the regular season last year, I'm going to be honest, I did not watch a lot of Serge Ibaka in Orlando for the like 4 months he was there. But once he got to Toronto, he got to do a little bit more with the ball in his hands, and it looked like on pick and rolls, he was used more as a dive man, whereas the Thunder would often use like Steven Adams in that role more than him. And then in the playoffs last year, to your point, I was at, I think it was game 4 between the Wizards and the Raptors, where the Wizards, despite being the 8 seed, tied that series. And Ibaka just looked completely lost in that series.
Yeah.
Didn't know what to do when he got the ball, so then wasn't calling for the ball, so then wasn't getting the ball that much. And it's like, we're paying this guy to be the third star on this team, along with Lowry and DeRozan, and we're not getting that production from him. Now, he doesn't have to be that. If he's not working, you do have this other option, Gasol, and they've both been fantastic. Gasol's already, I looked it up, plus 16, his net rating with the Raptors in pretty, obviously, more limited minutes. But Ibaka is plus 8.4 over the much longer stretch of the season. So you've got two, like, guys there who fit with the rest of the team very well and who do different things, right? When you play, if you play the Philadelphia 76ers, Gasol is going to be a better matchup for Embiid. If you play the Boston Celtics, Ibaka might be a better matchup against Al Horford. Or if one's just, even matchup aside, if one's just not playing well, you have another great, great option. Which I think is really important just to have that flexibility in playoffs, because the Thunder are about to go into the playoffs having maybe 6 or 7 guys you trust. And the Raptors have maybe 8, 9, even 10 guys who won't even all play, but in a certain series, or if one guy's just not performing well, you have these other options.
Yeah, I agree. And one trump card I think that some Raptors fans are hoping for, me included, is using Siakam at center.
Yes.
He's been a joy to watch this year. And, you know, I'm hoping that Nurse has just been not putting him in at center for too much, because he's kind of holding that as his trump card come playoff time.
Yeah, I would love to see that. And I'm glad you brought Siakam up, because I did want to talk to you about him. So he has come out of nowhere this year, I would say. He was, you know, a late first-round draft pick a couple seasons ago. Started getting, you know, more minutes last season, but not, I think most casual basketball fans had not heard of Pascal Siakam coming into the season. And then all of a sudden, he is just performing for this Toronto Raptors team. So, I mean, did you see this coming at the start of the season? What have you thought about Pascal this year?
I didn't see this coming. I mean, even as a diehard Raptors fan, I mean, we had our hopes up, and you know, there were always talks about, okay, well, if now that the Raptors have Kawhi, if there were any trade pieces that are still valuable, because the Raptors don't have you know, very good draft picks available, and you know, right, those won't be worthwhile anyways. It would always be Siakam or OG. In fact, even before the Kawhi trade, when there were, you know, rumors about Kawhi possibly ending up in Toronto, and when Woj first dropped that bomb that Kawhi was headed to Toronto, everyone started guessing, okay, well, it's Kawhi for DeMar. That's all we know right now. And for those 3+ hours, everyone was guessing, and everyone had either some form of Siakam and or OG Anunoby in those, and those were our two highly sought out prospects. The fact that, you know, Masai was able to pull that off without giving up either of them was just a miracle. And I can go on and on about that trade, but
yeah,
the long and the short of it is that we're very happy that Siakam is still on the squad. And I'll even admit that despite me gushing over him all year, how he can defend any position, he's perfect for today's NBA in terms of switchability. And he guarantees you some fast break points several times a game. As recently as 6 weeks ago, I was still throwing him into the trade machine. And that's because as recently as 6 weeks ago, Anthony Davis was available. So,
right.
I mean, you kind of get spoiled a bit by what Masai Ujiri is able to do with his team. And you start to wonder, like, oh, what is he capable of doing? So when Anthony Davis was available, all of a sudden I was like, well, I mean, Siakam is great and he's a future all-star, but Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis, right? So I'll admit that, you know, as recently as 6 weeks ago, I was 99% all in on Siakam, but that 1% was for the possibility of getting, you know, an all-world talent like Davis.
Right.
Having said that, I'm glad that we've kept Siakam, because ever since that trade deadline, he has been playing out of his mind, and he is going to be a problem in the playoffs, not only because of his ability to switch on defense, but on offense, he can be a ball handler if needed. He can now hit the three-pointer, which was his main weakness coming into the season. So in terms of finding a flaw in his game, there really isn't much. You could have used the Antetokounmpo rule of, okay, well, instead of him driving on us all the time or doing his spins, let's just back off on him. That's not going to work anymore, because his three-point shot is really coming around, especially that corner three. So, to answer your question, didn't see this coming, but I'm very excited for the future, because, you know, I'm sure the question about what's going to happen down the line, especially with Kawhi's decision on whether he stays or goes, a lot of it is, it's promising to know that regardless of Kawhi's decision, that you have a potential all-star in Siakam just waiting there and ready to take on any challenge.
Yeah. I also was hoping, I thought Anthony Davis to the Raptors was like kind of the dark horse, you know, don't send him to the Lakers. They can't trade him to Boston, send him to Toronto. If Toronto was able to get him in the door along with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle, and then you send up literally everyone else who the Pelicans want, that's a team that could not only win the East, but could even maybe push this Golden State team. But it never seemed like there was any real buzz about that. So now Pascal gets to stay in Toronto, where he's been a great fit. And I've really loved watching this year. To me, from the Thunder perspective, Pascal is what you hope Jeremy Grant could turn into in a couple of years, even though they're already the same age. So Pascal's well ahead of the curve there. But right, so these guys who like would have been small forwards even 5 years ago, probably, but are playing the power forward role now in the modern NBA, can shoot the three, can do stuff with the ball in their hands, can defend 1 through 5 defensively. They're long, they're rangy. They're skinnier than like a traditional power forward, but it seems to be working out well, especially with you pair them with a good rebounder like Adams here in OKC, or in Ibaka, or now Gasol or Valanciunas when he was still there in Toronto. And just to your point, Siakam can do stuff with the ball in his hand. The biggest thing that he has over Grant. He's a better scorer inside. Like, he has the spin move, which Grant does not have. But he also racks up assists. He gets his averages, like, I think, 3 per game. And if Jeremy Grant averages any assists per game, it's like 1. What Grant gives the Thunder is, like, at any one point, the Thunder have 2 guys on the court, either Westbrook or Dennis Schroeder, and then Paul George when he's out there with them, or sometimes Westbrook and Schroeder together, who can do something with the ball in their hands. And Grant, when he catches the ball in space, can do something that he can drive to the rim and finish a play. Like, he doesn't need to just dunk, or he can shoot a 3, but he's not able to set up others. And Siakam is able to make some decent passes. And to your point, he's just a threat in transition. And that spin move is beautiful, an incredible thing that I think Grant should study some tape of. But yeah, Jeremiah Grant is having the best season of his career and what I'd hoped for him. I'd wanted him to start even going back to last year because I thought Melo just was not contributing anything anymore. Grant's having his career, and Siakam is, I'm like, okay, well, maybe in 2 more years, Jeremiah Grant can be Pascal Siakam. So I'm interested to see those guys play against each other tomorrow night.
And, Friday night. Same here. I fully agree. And it just could, I think the balance in that is kind of funny because you're right. I mean, I can absolutely see Grant following in the same footsteps as Siakam a year or two down the line where, you know, he kind of steps up and improves those small holes that he has in his game. Mm-hmm. But his improvement this year, I mean, even as a Toronto fan who never gets to watch Thunder games, even I've noticed it. And it's amazing to see and very promising for the Thunder's future. And I think it's kind of ironic that with Grant kind of, you know, on the precipice of being, I guess, the Thunder's Siakam. On the flip side, we're hoping that Leonard ends up following the same path that George did, right? About
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the rumors about going to L.A. are the same. And we're just hoping that he resigns and stays in Toronto.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, so what is your feel on that? Do you think, I mean, at this, do you think it comes down to how well they do in the playoffs, or like how far in the playoffs will they have to go to guarantee he stays, or is it just totally up in the air with Kawhi?
You know, depending on when this episode gets published, I'll tell you right now, the short answer is I have a strong feeling he's staying regardless of how we do in the playoffs. Having said that, a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals will help. A trip to the NBA Finals will absolutely, you know, put things overboard. And I think Raptors fans are going to go a little crazy. Not let alone with a finals trip, but just the thought of Leonard staying. And I don't know if I'm probably in the minority here, but in terms of saying that he is going to stay, but it's just that the media outside of Toronto is so adamantly sure that he is going to leave for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm blindsided by my Raptors fandom. Or am I just reading the tea leaves a little bit better than those that are outside of Toronto? Because, I mean, I think, again, the parallels to Paul George and the Thunder. I mean, it was written in stone, right? Like, he was going to the Lakers. I mean,
gone.
I mean, you
and
obviously,
especially when they lost that first round series in 6 games to the Jazz.
Yeah.
Gone. Everyone thought he was out the door.
Absolutely, right? And I think that what gets lost in all this is, it's not just about wins and losses. It's and you can obviously speak to this way better than I can, but I mean, let me turn this around and ask you, what do you think was the biggest factor in him resigning that I guess regular NBA fans or non-Thunder fans just didn't see?
So it's two things. that as far as I would know, not that I've, you know, have inside sources with the Thunder, but so culture is the first thing, which is a buzzword that everyone throws around. Everyone wants to talk about team culture, but the Thunder have always run themselves as that kind of a Spurs type organization that's focused on the little details, right? They had a welcoming party from the moment Paul George got off the plane. They went fishing with him. He loves fishing. Right when he got to Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook, who has, you know, gotten some crap in the past for how good of a teammate he is, like went out of his way to ingratiate himself with Paul George, do things he liked. They were laser tagging together right after that loss in the playoffs to show they were buds. And so he really liked the organization. Not that he was coming from a bad organization, the Pacers, but just this very professional organization that went out, you know, as much as the Carmelo Anthony trade did not work on the court, it showed how serious they were about pushing for a championship, which PG was big about. And I think the second thing is Paul George has become the Thunder's best player this year, but he still is not the driving engine of the offense. That's Russell Westbrook. And I think Paul George really liked that because he kind of had to do that in Indiana because their point guards were guys more like George Hill and Jeff Teague, who are fine point guards but aren't making things run. Paul George had to make things run. And Paul George prefers, and his best role is playing without the ball in his hands more than with the ball in his hands, you know, coming off of a lot of pin down screens, moving around, roving the floor. And then as the defense is, if the defense is distracted by someone else, he's able to catch the ball and hit fire. If the defense isn't broken down, he's still able to make plays because he's a great player, but it's easier for him if someone else is the one starting the position with the ball in hands. And Westbrook was able to do that for him. And that was the first time in his career he'd played with a guy who could do that for him. Now, if he'd gone to the Lakers, obviously LeBron James is also capable of doing that, but I think Paul George liked the culture in Oklahoma City. I think there's been some noise out there that superstar players were hesitant about hitching themselves to LeBron's team because there's a lot more of a media circus with that. Oklahoma City does not have any sort of a media circus around it. Much smaller city, and as much as PG is from LA and likes LA, those are, I guess, the reasons he stayed. The culture of the team, and then just being able to play with a guy like Westbrook, who's not only a fellow great player, but also a great player who meshes really well with PG's style.
I think everything, every single word you said was music to my ears, because all of that just jives perfectly with Kawhi in Toronto when it comes to thinking about the culture that Toronto has built here. I mean, just the word load management was not a thing this year. And all of a sudden... Right. You know, teams like Philly are now doing it, and LA, I mean, it's a term that I feel like Toronto started with Kawhi Leonard. Other teams are starting to do that now. And that's just one of many reasons. And I don't want to spoil it, but all I'll say is this: for anyone listening to this podcast, take a look at Raptors HQ tomorrow. I should say on Wednesday, approximately 11 a.m. We've got something big that'll come out. I'm a part of it, and I'll just say it's going to be worth your while, even for a chuckle. But honestly, I'll just say this: I think Kawhi's staying. And then further to your point about you know, not having to necessarily be the driving force behind the offense, not necessarily being you know, being forced to be the superstar to carry the team on his back. I think that Lowry definitely fits the bill there as the Westbrook to your George. So there's a lot to like there in terms of what you said. And you know, the hope here is that not only that we can, that we've kind of won him over with the culture, is that, you know, the advantage that Toronto has over not just LA, but really any other team that is going to make a pitch to Kawhi, is that he, by the time he is, you know, we all assume he's not going to pick up his player option, but by the time July 1st rolls around, there is the Raptors have a year head start on the competition, and he's already here. So I think there's a lot to like there. And I'm not even willing to, I haven't even really considered, as others have, but I haven't really considered what this team will look like without Kawhi. Because I think I'm so laser focused on he's definitely staying. But if we were to venture down that road, if we were to consider him leaving, it's Masai has set up this team to be ready to rebuild fairly quickly. I mean, that was part of, I mean, even just looking at the DeRozan for Kawhi trade, DeRozan mm-hmm. had an additional year on his contract versus Kawhi's, so he got out of that contract. Most contracts, if we looked even past next season, only one person is under contract, and that's Norm Powell at $10 million. But between this offseason and next year, I mean, it's next year already the Raptors roster is fairly set. We can also fairly assume that, assuming things go fairly well in the playoffs, Gasol is probably going to pick up his player option and stick around. Mm-hmm. The decisions around how we're going to fit in Kawhi's contract will definitely affect other areas of the roster. But again, back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, having Siakam there, having Ibaka and having Lowry all under contract and ready to go, that's already a great core. So I'm not too concerned about even if he were to leave, what this team will look like. I don't think it'll be any kind of downward spiral into tank city. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just excitement all around. But at the end of the day, I really do think he's staying.
I like the optimism. I love this trade the moment was made because it reminded me of the Paul George trade, which worked out. But even if Leonard does leave, to your point, they got off the extra year of DeRozan's contract. They're very well set up with Siakam's leap, and OG Anunoby is a promising young guy. They'll have guys like Lowry and Gasol who can either keep them at like a high 40s win pace and make the playoffs, or if they wanted to pivot towards like a full rebuild, you could get decent assets for those guys. They're well set up if Leonard does leave. Obviously, if he stays, they're, you know, an elite team now. They could contend for a championship this year. If he stays, that could continue into the future. So that's enough about, you know, the Raptors writ large. Let's talk specifically about these two games coming up. Where do you think, where should Toronto look to kind of attack OKC when Toronto has the ball and is looking to score? Where are the strong points that they have against this Oklahoma City defense?
I kind of hinted at it earlier in terms of how the team has looked since acquiring Gasol, and it's really about just moving the ball. There were times earlier in the season when even, especially when Kawhi's on the floor, that, you know, the Raptors would just give him the ball and it would just be iso ball all the way until, you know, he gets a shot. So there wasn't much creativity on that end. But ever since Gasol's been acquired, again, there's been a lot of passing. Even if we look at secondary assists, the Raptors are second in the NBA since the trade. Potential assists, the Raptors have gone up from 15th to 3rd. So again, at the very core, it's about moving the ball. And I guess some promising stats from that is that, you know, since the All-Star break, the Raptors, who were struggling earlier in the season in hitting their threes, have now turned that around and have been on fire from beyond the arc. So they've been currently they're fourth in the league in threes made since the All-Star break and first in three-point field goal percentage. How that relates to this game is that during that same stretch since the All-Star break, the Thunder are 25th in opponent three-point field goal percentage. Mm-hmm. And they're also 28th in opponent's free throw attempts. The Raptors are a very good free throw shooting team, fifth in the league over the entire season. So I think that the amount of ball movement will not only open up the floor in terms of allowing for more threes or open threes to be shot, it'll also end up opening up driving lanes, because what I think will end up happening was that OKC will, a lot of the defenders will stay home on defense and stay closer to their shooters. Mm-hmm. And that just opens up driving lanes, and there goes the, you know, the free throw attempts will possibly go up there. So I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Toronto on the offensive end.
Yeah, Gasol is a problem in this one, because Oklahoma City all year, Steven Adams has struggled defending these centers who can facilitate from the elbows or from the top of the arc. It pulls him away from the rim, where he's effective as a rim protector and as the guy. You know, Steven Adams doesn't rack up a ton of defensive rebounds himself, but he creates defensive rebounds because he's such an artist as a box-out guy, so then Westbrook ends up being the one pulling down those rebounds. You pull Adams away from the rim, you're able to get better looks when you're at the rim, you're able to get a few more offensive rebounds against a Thunder team that's normally good at not allowing them. And Adams has struggled, like, he's a fine post defender. He struggles defending guys in space. Now, Gasol isn't as quick or as much of a driving threat as like Nikola Jokic and Al Horford are of getting Adams problems, but he is still going to play far away from the rim where Adams is less comfortable. And to your point, if Gasol is up at the elbows or the top of the three-point arc with Adams guarding him, and there's four three-point shooters around him, so the Thunder have to stay relatively attached, those backdoor cut lanes are wide open. So if one guy is able to just slip himself three, Gasol's going to dime him up, and that's going to be very effective. If the Thunder are playing those lanes more and playing off, that's going to lead to those open threes that you talked about, which the Thunder have been porous at defending since the All-Star break. Their defense overall is, like, okay since the All-Star break. Their offense has been dreadful, which is why they've been losing so much. But, you know, they were, like, an elite defensive team the first few months of the season. Recently, they've been an above-average one, and against, like, a great team with the Raptors. Above-average on defense won't cut it if your offense isn't producing on the other end. They have – the nice thing is, you know, Kawhi Leonard is still the best player in the Raptors. Paul George can probably defend him about as well as any wing defender in the league, so you like that. And you probably like if Toronto is, you know, dumping the ball to Kawhi and trying to isolate against PG. He'll get some because he's Kawhi, but PG will get some stops because he's PG. But if the ball is swinging around the court, OKC has struggled against those ball movement heavy teams. Teams like the Nuggets recently have really carved them up with passing. And yeah, the three point line, some of it is teams have hit shots to like you're OK seeding. Like Draymond Green was hitting threes when they played the Warriors on Saturday. Dwayne Wade was hitting threes when they played the Heat last night. It's like, all right, you live with that. But there are some of it is real where they're not defending the line as well as they were earlier in the season because they're worried about other things or they think, you know, Paul George is very good at like he plays pretty far off a guy and he's so long and quick that he recovers. Russell Westbrook and Terrence Ferguson are not as good at that, but they'll play off anyways. And then suddenly that three pointer is open and it falls. So I do think I am worried about defending the Raptors, both because they're an elite offense and both because Oklahoma City's defense just hasn't been what it was at the start of the season since the All-Star break. And because, you know, Lowry, Leonard, Siakam are all great players too, but at least like I think the Thunder have good options against them. Gasol is exactly the kind of center that Steven Adams struggles against. And when Ibaka comes back from suspension, because is he going to play in the Wednesday game or is he going to play in the Friday game or both?
He's back for the Wednesday game.
So he's a pick and pop guy, which also gives Adams the same kind of problems where the Thunder especially like to blitz pick and roll and have Adams come very high up. And then the idea, you know, if you have a rim rolling center is that Jeremiah Grant or whoever tags them in the lane and can recover the shooter, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. But Ibaka's not going to do that. He's going to slide back out to the 3-point line a lot of the time for those pick and pop threes that he's pretty good at. And that's just another thing, like the Thunder just kind of struggle against those big men who can pass or can shoot threes. Gasol can do both of those things. Ibaka can shoot threes. There's not going to be a minute where Steven Adams is playing against the type of center he's comfortable with. He was very comfortable playing against Jonas Valanciunas, but he's not on the team anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if there was a poison to pick when it comes to the Raptors, it is actually what you mentioned in terms of Gasol and Ibaka. Yes, they can shoot the three, but they're not the ones. I mean, if you were to pick one,
you've got better.
Those are the ones. Yeah, there are better shooters. Those are the ones, and Ibaka has shown that, you know, if there's any daylight and he's beyond the arc, he'll take it. And if you're the Thunder, you live with that because that's probably the lesser of the other options, right?
Right. The Thunder try to play a defense where they give up, you know, nothing. They don't give up threes or shots at the rim, but you can get overtaxed that way if you're anything less than perfect, which is why they have kind of given up. You know, in some games, they've given up a lot of threes. In the game against Miami, they let Miami hit a bunch of threes at the start of the game. They overcorrected, and then Miami got into the lane pretty much at will, which is not something you would have said about the Miami Heat a lot this season. So the Thunder have a lot to figure out on that end. On the flip side of it, when OKC is on offense, where do you think Toronto needs to focus the most of their energies at defending this kind of Oklahoma City attack, which has not been that great over the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, I realize that, yeah, they haven't been that great on offense. I mean, I talked about this. I have a weekly article, the wrap-up, where I preview the games of the week. And one of the stats that kind of blew my mind was that, the Thunder are ranked 29th since the All-Star break. But having said that,
I believe it is 30th after the loss to the Heat last night.
Actually, you know, it's funny. It was 30th when I wrote it on Sunday night. And after the Heat game, it actually went up to 29th.
Had seen 30th. Okay, that makes sense.
But despite that, the part that scares me about OKC's offense is that they're number one in offensive rebounding. And that's just an area where Toronto just perpetually struggles at. And I'm worried about crashing the boards, to be honest. I mean, we can say all we want about how Toronto's defense is, you know, it's top 10 defense and there's a lot of guys that can switch. But at the end of the day, we are very susceptible to very good offensive rebounding teams. And that sucks the life out of you when you're making the right calls on defense, making the right switches, forcing bad shots, but you can't corral the rebound. It's just, it sucks the life out of you. So that for me is what I'm really worried about. And in taking it a step further, both our bigs, Ibaka and Gasol, have been susceptible when you do the pick and roll game against them. they tend to just lay back, wait in the paint, and that just opens up a free mid-ranger from the free throw line for anyone who's the pick and roll ball handler. So if you're looking for areas to exploit, I mean, Russell can have that free throw shot every time, that shot at the free throw line. So that's one area where, you know, he can definitely exploit. And then if any of our bigs finally start to play up to their man, then there you go. The boards are ready to be crashed, right? So
right.
I think that's the area that I'm kind of concerned about. Other than that, I mean, if as long as they play, as the Raptors play, at least kind of average on that end, I think we'll be okay on the defensive end. Because I really don't think OKC, as poorly as their offense has looked since the All-Star break, this is not their identity. And I think you mm-hmm. can probably answer this better than I can. I mean, this is a team that I still have, and I'm not just saying that because I'm on this podcast, but I literally wrote this a couple weeks ago, how if I were to predict how the playoffs would go, I would predict a Raptors Thunder NBA Finals. And I know that sounds like I'm just saying that, but I really wrote that. I wish I could just tweet it out to say that I actually did. And also the podcast that we run on last week's episode, which I actually was not on, the three of the guys doing the podcast, they ran through the entire playoff bracket and, you know, going series by series, game by game, whatever. And they also ended up with Raptors versus Thunder. So again, back to the original question about the offense. Yes, it's been horrible since the All-Star break, but this is not their identity. We all know that, you know, even if they continue to play this poorly come playoff time, nobody wants to face this Thunder team. And I include the Warriors in that. So, yeah, I look forward to this game. I mean, I kind of wish that Lowry was 100%. It sounds like he's questionable for Wednesday. At the very least, he may be there for Friday, but I'm hoping to see both teams at full strength and, you know, just kind of going for each other. Because if anything, at least for the Raptors standpoint, this is the last team who they play in the regular season that has a net rating above zero.
Mm-hmm.
We have the easiest schedule remaining in the entire league. So these two games, I really wanted it to be at full strength just to kind of at least give me peace of mind that, A, we're ready for the playoffs, and B, that we can finally play fully healthy.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping what you said is a good dose of reality to some of the Thunder fans who have seen this. We've lost the last three games and the sky is falling. The Thunder aren't even going to make the playoffs now. It's like, calm down. It's March. So the Thunder have not been playing the way you would want them to play since the All-Star break. And I think a few things have gone into that. Paul George was hurt. He got hurt, the first game back from the All-Star break, they beat the Jazz in this double overtime thriller. They looked fine in that game. That was the game Paul George, he got taken out the next game for hurting his shoulder and then missed three straight. And since coming back, he was clearly not the same guy. If you lose your guy who's like your MVP candidate, your best offensive and defensive player, your team is going to suffer. The heartening thing recently is he's looked better. He put up good numbers in the Heat loss and the Golden State loss. He's run to form. Russell Westbrook has shot the ball better even as the team hasn't played as well. I don't know how much of that is just the noise of he's figured out his jump shot while Paul George was hurt, so of course they weren't winning as much, whereas there could be a second part of it where if Westbrook's jump shot is falling a little better, it's still not falling as well as Paul George's or other looks, but he'll look for his own shot a little more, and that sucks the energy out of the Thunder offense because Russ is one of those guys who can shoot you out of a game on the wrong night. But I think Russell Westbrook being able to shoot again, at least passively, is a good thing, not a bad thing. That's my hot take. And I think if he and Paul George are both hitting at the same time, things will be okay. The concerning thing past those two guys is that Jeremiah Grant and Terrence Ferguson especially, haven't shot the three balls well since the All-Star break. And you need those guys to hit threes because that's who defenses are going to slough off of or even ignore completely in the playoffs until those guys are able to punish them by hitting some three-pointers. You saw this in the playoffs last year against the Jazz when Jeremiah Grant was out there. The Jazz did ignore him when the Thunder went to him. He couldn't hit a three. He's shooting 38% this year. Ferguson is hitting like 36%. But until those guys prove it with the bright lights on in the playoffs, that's where the help is going to come from. So those guys do need to be able to hit a decent amount of their threes for the Thunder to be as good as they want to be. But if Westbrook and George are both firing and they're looking for the right kind of shots, right, to your point, it's one thing for Westbrook to take those pull-up shots at the foul line against a drop big. What he sometimes does is he, like, the screen comes, he gets like one step around inside the 3-point line. He hasn't even really created space, and he shoots anyways. Got to get rid of those shots. Got to get rid of those shots where he tries to back a guy like, you know, Kyle Lowry in this game, who's actually a very good point guard defender, into the post and shoots these like gross, bricky fadeaway jumpers. Got to get rid of those. When Russell Westbrook is in pick and roll mode, looking either get all the way to the rim or those pull up mid range jumpers, but really get all the way to the rim because that's what's opened up the passing for everyone else. And if Paul George is circling around screens while that's happening, catching the ball with space to pull up for three or drive through himself, that just is going to open up even more space. And if you give Ferguson and Grant even more space, more open threes versus contested threes, hopefully their percentages start to come back in line. So I do think there's plenty of time for the Thunder to figure it out. The problem for them is, unlike the Raptors, who have that very easy schedule, the Thunder have the hardest schedule, at least in the Western Conference, left in the regular season. They got to play teams like, they got to play the Raptors twice. They got to play the Nuggets again. They have to play the Bucks still. So it's not going to be easy, but you also don't want to fatten yourself up by beating up on the Phoenix Suns and saying, okay, we're ready for the playoffs. I do think this is a good kind of crucible test for them. And if they are able to get their offense rolling against these great teams, then there's no reason it won't be rolling into the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And you hit it on the head with that last point in terms of like the Raptors, you know, have the easy schedule, which mean, again, that it just increases the importance of these next two games against the Thunder as our last test before the playoffs. When you were talking about, you know, the different players and their roles, there was one name you didn't mention. And as a Raptors fan, yes, we're a little interested in Patrick Patterson. Like, I know he's not, you know, a very integral part of the rotation. But I guess two questions. One is basketball related. One's not. One is, like, how has he been? Like, how have you felt he is? Like, is he even part of your playoff rotation? Or is he just kind of a minutes filler in garbage time? And the second question I'll ask after. But yeah, how has he been?
He has sadly been kind of a disappointment in Oklahoma City. He's not fallen out of the rotation, but they signed him not this summer, but last summer before they traded for Carmelo Anthony and Thomas. He was going to start the power forward position. And he's always been like had great net ratings with the Raptors. He would play in those Kyle Lowry plus bench units that killed everybody. He can shoot the three as a stretch four. He's a decent guy at like moving the ball to the next play. Like not like a great passer, but a ball mover. The ball doesn't stick with Patrick Patterson and a good defensive force. And that's like, that's perfect. That's what Oklahoma City needs at the four alongside these two great offensive players. And it just has never worked out that way. His defense, he's looked slower. I believe he was recovering from an injury and left Toronto, and he's never quite looked the same in Oklahoma City as he did there. So obviously his defense hasn't been as good. He can hit the three when he's wide open, but he kind of passes up shots if anyone's in the area. So then it's just like, okay, he's, you know, not the kind of guy who's really a post-up artist either, so he's not bringing a lot to the offense. They started him for the first three games of the season. It quickly became clear that Jeremy Grant was the better option at power forward and has had the starting spot ever since. And they brought in Markieff Morris in the buyout market, and he's completely taken Patterson's spot in the rotation as the backup power forward. He played a little bit last night against Miami, but that was kind of in garbage time. I think at some point Donovan will give him, whether it's here in the end of the regular season or someone gets in foul trouble in the playoffs, there'll be one more time we see Patrick Patterson because Donovan does like him. The team signed him for a reason. He's got one more year left on his contract. And when he's at the best version of himself, as you well know as a Raptors fan, he's a very useful player and then a guy who can hit some shots, defend well, and then doesn't take up the ball. But he just hasn't been the same guy in Oklahoma City, which is why he's out of the rotation in favor of Morris now.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And then the non-basketball question is you know, in Toronto, we kind of knew him as a pretty big movie buff. He had, I think it was every week or every 2 weeks, he had movie nights at one of the local theaters, and he'd always be there, and it would be like whatever's the new, exciting, amazing movie that came out, he would host like a movie night there, and it was kind of a popular thing. Does he have anything like that going on in OKC?
Do not quote me on this because it was, I think, at like the start of the regular season, but I saw something that he is producing a movie, like a small movie now. So that is still definitely a thing. He hosts an event in Oklahoma City where he like that same kind of thing where like he takes, I think it's, you know, kids to the movies with him. And it's like Patrick Patterson Presents or something like that. And yeah, that was the first thing I remember reading about when he came to the team, the first like, not just what is Patrick Patterson, the basketball player, the first like human interest story was that Patrick Patterson is a big, big movie guy. but the thing is, those human interest stories kind of start to dry up when a guy's no longer in the rotation. So I haven't heard anything about it in 2019. But Hopefully he is still watching movies and enjoying himself.
Well, he has the time now, right?
Right, in his free time, exactly.
Oh, great.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everyone can check out your writing at Raptors HQ and listen to the That's a Wrap podcast, which you do, which is an excellent look at the Raptors. I listened to a couple episodes to get ready for this program. And we've got two games Wednesday and Friday between these teams, and if we're lucky, a matchup in the NBA Finals to look forward to between these squads.
Thanks so much, Ben.